Baseball is in full swing. NBA playoffs are heating up, and your NFL team is gearing up for training camp. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
To give voice. It's a phrase we use to describe the ability to amplify someone's story, to give it voice. For close to three decades here in New York, radio reporter Peter Haskell has been doing just that, giving voice to stories of great community interest.
People hit hard by the hurricane are struggling to rebuild, and they blame the contractors that the city sent in. Here's WCBS reporter Peter Haskell.
The work on Diane Doyle's home was finally completed in 2018. But her relief was short-lived. Less than a year later, she was forced out again.
Our sprinkler system froze.
A day after testifying before Congress, Lou Alvarez is going for his 69th round of chemo.
We have to do it, because if we don't do it, nobody else will.
Our big story, Amazon backing out of its deal to build a second headquarters in Long Island City, Queens. Our Peter Haskell has been hearing from both sides this afternoon.
The deal was not only going to bring 25,000 jobs to the city, it was going to expand and cement New York's position as a serious and growing tech hub. Now that might not happen. Julie Samuels.
In the irony of ironies, over the past few years, Peter's voice has been swallowed up by a rare vocal disorder called dysphonia.
Spasmodic dysphonia is a condition where the vocal cords don't come together properly, and then it just creates a host of problems with a voice.
This week on 880 In Depth, we're giving voice to Peter's story.
While it sounds like sometimes I might be about to take my last breath, that is not true. I feel fortunate that I'm otherwise healthy.
This week we tell the story of a rare medical condition that has ended the broadcast career of one of New York's best known and most respected journalists.
It's hard for me to walk away, but I know the time is right and that the overwhelming feeling I have really is gratitude.
Welcome to 880 In Depth. I'm Michael Wallace. Peter Haskell has been a radio fixture on WCBS since 1994. He's covered everything from earthquakes and plane crashes.
A couple of witnesses I've spoken to say that it appeared as if the pilot was trying to bring down the plane.
To politics and 9/11.
It's like a light-colored ash still billowing up from the location where those twin towers used to be, and when you look at that...
Peter's work on the health crisis from 9/11 over these past 21 years has won awards and has given voice to our community's continuing trauma over the September 11th terror attacks.
With his verbal jabs and slaps, John Stewart's fury was visceral. Once again, first responders trekked here to D.C. with their walkers, wheelchairs, and oxygen tanks.
It is frustrating and it is angering, and to watch politicians use their sacrifice to their own benefit and not respond to their needs, it's infuriating.
But in recent years, Peter's voice has suffered some trauma of its own. Listeners began to notice Peter's delivery become labored, his words slurring together at times. Privately, Peter has been struggling with this issue for years. Earlier this month, with conditions becoming unsustainable, Peter announced that he would be stepping down and ending his radio reporting career.
I feel fortunate that I'm otherwise healthy, in good shape, but this is not a life-threatening condition. It's certainly a career-threatening condition, and that's where I'm at.
It is a personal story. It is our story, but we felt there is value in sharing it. People often face challenges in life that we don't hear the backstory to, so this is the backstory. Peter recently sat down to talk about his condition with our boss, news director Tim Scheld.
When did you begin to feel like you had a problem that needed to be addressed?
So it probably goes back 10 years to 2012, where every now and then I'd have a problem and would think, that doesn't seem right. And then the next day I'd be fine, it would go away. And so it probably took me a year or two to see a doctor,
first guy wasn't sure what it is. Second guy said, yeah, I think it's this spasmodic dysphonia. And I was going to go to him, and I was talking to a friend of mine. It's like, you got to find the best person there is. And there was, at the time, this nationally renowned ENT. So I just called him on the phone. The guy actually called me back. And I said, well, this doctor's not sure if I have spasmodic dysphonia. He's like, oh, yeah, you got it. Here's the guy you need to see. He's the best guy in New York City. And I went to this doctor, and I've been seeing him since.
So how did it manifest itself? What was wrong with you that you felt like you had to pay attention to?
So at first, I'm not even sure. I couldn't. I was losing range in certain ways. I couldn't have my normal inflection. I had to change the inflection. And again, this would come and go. So I was like, I had no idea what was going on, but I had no reason to think it was serious. And then it came to a point where I would do a report and I'd run out of breath. And so there were times where it might have sounded like I was about to take my final breath, but that was not the case. It was just, I actually saw a pulmonologist. I wasn't sure if it was my lungs, and I was fine there.
And your specialist that you ultimately went to begin to deal with this, his name was?
Andrew Blitzer. He's a guy who pioneered the treatment that I'm getting now.
Maybe still do the 0.1 units because that seems to be safe here.
And in preparing for this podcast, this show, you actually sat down and had a conversation with him about this so we could share in some of your personal recollection and his personal expertise.
What is spasmodic dysphonia?
Spasmodic dysphonia is a dystonia of the larynx. Dystonia is a disorder where there is some interference in the brain, we think mostly in the brainstem, processing sensory information and turning it into motor signal, causing spasms of muscles, in your particular case, laryngeal muscles, that affect the way you speak.
What causes this?
Now, there are some people that have it on a genetic basis. There are some people that have many strokes or car accidents where they have head trauma. For most people, we call it idiopathic, meaning we don't know. It's thought that maybe there are some cases related to viruses that may have an effect on the central nervous system, but we don't know.
Is there a cure?
Not at the moment.
So I want to talk about treatment. How soon did you begin the treatment, and what did the treatment entail? Were there different courses of treatment, or did you just have, are there other courses of treatment that you could choose to do?
So from what I was told, there, first of all, they can't fix this thing. There's no cure, so they treat it. And what they do is they inject Botox. And so
Botox, which they use.
So I've got the smoothest vocal cords anybody has ever seen, no wrinkles in them. And they inject the Botox through the throat. They put a needle into the throat, and then they inject the muscle that controls the vocal cords. And in my case, they do each treatment, they alternate from one side or the other. And so the muscle is paralyzed by the Botox. And so one cord basically stays partially closed. And the problem that I have is that the cords don't meet and make the sounds that I want them to make. By forcing one side closed, if the other side is moving, they hopefully rub together.
So the way that I understand this is a spasm that occurs because of this condition, and this treatment tries to deal with the spasm, tries to eliminate the spasm. It's not a cure. It's managing the manifestation, right?
Pretty much, yes. Yeah.
Tell me about the treatment itself that you ended up starting in, what did you say, 2014?
I think probably 2014. I would go every 3 months or so. They use a laryngoscope where, you know, if you've had it, they just put a tube up your nose, got a light and a camera on it. They comes down your throat and gives you a video image of vocal cords, and then they take a look at which side is moving, which side is not.
Sniff.
E. 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 E.
What's that like?
So the tube is, you know, they give you a little anesthetic. It's a little unpleasant, not a big deal. Look, I've done this so many times now. It's like, okay, hey, doc, here, come on, just stick the tube up my nose. I'm all good. And so tell us about this treatment then.
When we first began using botulinum toxin, there was an ophthalmologist that also, curiously enough, at the University of California, San Francisco, who began using botulinum toxin or thought of using it in children with something called strabismus, where their eyes don't focus together well and they would end up needing glasses with prisms and whatever. And the ophthalmologist used to operate on these kids trying to correct the muscles. And so that worked for a lot of kids, but sometimes it just wasn't enough. And he thought if there was something he could inject to just give a tiny little bit more weakness, he could get the eyes to focus together. And after using lots of different things, he used botulinum toxin, and by weakening the muscles, first in monkey and then in a limited clinical trial in children, done under FDA guidance, he found that it was very successful. So then he began looking at other things that ophthalmologists treat, and one of them was blepharospasm, where the eyes close and they can't open easily. And so by weakening those muscles, he could correct the blepharospasm, which is a dystonia of the eyelids. And after that, when that was so successful, the FDA came to a number of movement disorders neurologists. Mark Hallett at the NIH, Stan Fon at Columbia, who I worked with, and Joe Jankovic at Baylor in Houston. And they challenged these doctors to say, you take care of a lot of dystonia, could this be used for other dystonias? So in 1984, we had a man who had been getting Botox for eyelid, for blepharospasm, eyelid closure, and his voice started to become affected. And so we injected him as the first person in the world, actually, to be treated with botulinum toxin for dystonia of the larynx. And then after that, we began using it for a lot of other dystonias as well. But we had a few people that have what you have, the abductor form or the opening form. And in around 1986, we injected the first abductor or opening dystonia. And it was very difficult because we weren't sure exactly how to best approach it. And so the first injection took us about an hour to do, trying to isolate where the needle was and were we in the right place and would it diffuse to something else that we didn't want. But after that, it's proved to be very successful, used judiciously, and so we've injected. It's a less common form. It's only about probably 1 in 10 of the laryngeal dystonias are abductor form, and I think we've treated probably around 180 or 190 since that time.
What does he see? You probably can see it on a screen as well. What did you see in those images?
So he takes the video, then he'll play back the video, and he'll explain to me each time. Every time I go, it's like, okay, I see movement on one side. We're going to inject this side. Here's the tricky part. If you paralyze one side, it stays open. If both sides are paralyzed, it stays closed. You can't breathe. So it's you can't get too large a dose. And so fortunately, the doctor's very conservative with this. I'm very conservative. I want to speak. It's what I do for a living. But I don't want to end up in the hospital with a trach tube. And so that's the alternative. And so it's very tricky. How large a dose do you give? And so, you know, I'll discuss with the doctor. Sometimes I'll say, look, I was just here 6 weeks ago. if you can't do anything, we'll wait another few weeks. And that has happened a few times.
And so this started in 2014, and you had, how frequently did you begin to have this treatment?
So I started having it probably every 3 months or so. Sometimes it was give or take. But in the past year or two, it's become more like every 2 months, just because I was trying to keep my voice at a level and a quality that I could continue to work.
Tell me a little bit about the procedure itself that you would go through. And by our count, we think that since 2014, you might have gone through 40 or 50 of these?
Could be, yep.
So I'll give you a little anesthetic. And this may make you cough.
Look, they stick a needle into your throat between the below the Adam's apple, maybe a little bit below the Adam's apple, and there's kind of a soft cartilage spot there, and they put a little anesthetic in there, and then the doctor gets the Botox, puts it in a needle. He puts two pads on my neck, which are similar to what you would get on an EKG, and the way I understand it, and I can't say this is completely accurate, there's a wire connected to the needle which will indicate if he's hearing air or solid. He's trying to find a spot in the cartilage to stick the needle through the cartilage into the muscle to paralyze it. So, look, having somebody stick a needle in your throat is unpleasant. I'm not going to tell you it's painful. It's not like, oh my God, he's killing me. So it's like, you know, 20 seconds of unpleasant, then it's done, and I'm like, okay, thank you, and then it's over.
Do you get a sense of the number of people that have to deal with this in society today?
So according to the people with the National Spasmodic Dysphonia Association, there are 50,000 people in North America who have been diagnosed with it. So it's relatively rare. It's very rare, actually. And because of that, there's not a lot of research on it because they don't put money toward a condition, I'm guessing, A, that's not life-threatening, and B, that has such a small constituency.
You and I have talked about this before. There are other people in our profession, broadcasters, news people, and we won't name them, but people who do struggle with health conditions that have affected their voice. If their voice is part of who they are in their daily jobs for news broadcasting, and you've had contact with a number of them and who are in similar positions, maybe not exactly the same medical condition.
Right. So I've been in touch with the people who have the same condition, spasmodic dysphonia, and other people, radio or TV types, who have vocal cord problems. And I think one thing to add is that the condition is exacerbated by stress. So if you're on the radio or on the TV, you can imagine there's a certain amount of stress that goes with, can I get my job done today? What is it going to take to get my job done today? And, you know, some days it was a real struggle. The flip side of that is I'm really stubborn. So I'm going to keep doing it until it's as good as it's going to be. Now, when it's finished, you know, there are days I'm like, oh man, that was not pretty, but it was done. And there are other days I'm just going to keep doing it. I'm going to keep doing it. And it's like, okay, I'm good. And, you know, that's been hard to deal with. It's been a challenge. You know, as long as I've been doing this job, from the beginning, as I was taught, you know, you read your copy before you record it or you go live. And so I would record, I would read this to myself, and in my head, it's like strings and horns and woodwinds, and it sounds like a symphony. And then I'd hear it out loud, and it's like, okay, it's like, you know, nuts and bolts in a tin can. So, but I'm stubborn. And so I'm like, I'm gonna plug. And in my own mind, my whole career is not because I'm more talented than anybody. I'm not smarter than anybody, that's for sure. But I work hard. And so my mentality from the day I started in this profession was to work hard. And so every day it's been harder to do, but I've just been plugging and plugging and plugging and plugging.
And a topic of conversation that you and I have had over the course of our, you know, long friendship, certainly the last 20 years is, have you ever given any thought to whether 9/11 played a role in any of this? You and I were both down in that area for significant periods of time in the early days, in the days, weeks, months after fires were burning. You have done more reporting on 9/11 health impacts than anybody. I consider you an expert in this area. Have you ever considered that it could have contributed to your issues?
So I've asked about that, and I think part of the problem is this condition is so rare. So even if they get one or two, and I think what I was told, they've got a couple, but the numbers are so small, it's really hard for them to say there's a connection, there's not.
And there really is no explanation as to how one gets it. As the doctor explained prior, he said it could have come from an accident, not in your case, but there are a lot of explanations, but none for you, right?
I think the simplest way that I've heard it is there's no explanation. You know, why do people get any kind of a host of conditions that are not brought on by environmental factors or health risks or behavioral risks? People get all kinds of conditions.
So we're doing this conversation as a service to let people know about this, but also to help explain your personal situation. And I think there's value in all of that. From a health point of view, from a vocal point of view, what do you do now? Do you continue those treatments now that you're going to stop, pull back from broadcasting? Are you still going to get the needle in your Adam's apple or in that, you know, in the muscle accompanying that area of your vocal cords? Is that a treatment that you'll continue? Do you worry about more debilitating nature of being able to communicate with your wife and kids and family?
Yeah, I mean, I'm certainly worried about it. I think my intent is to continue getting the injections, but probably not as frequently. So if I'm not going to be on the radio every day, I can have a decline a little bit more. And that does, I think, two things to me. One is I'm not going to, you know, run out of breath if I'm running up the steps, which sometimes, like, after I get a shot, and if I go up steps, I feel it because the airway is so narrowed. And the doctor has told me that even when I'm coming in before the shot, sometimes about like 30% of what a normal airway would be. After the injection, it gets smaller. And so I think that allows me that. And then when I go, I can get a larger dose, which I'm not sure what the difference is, but I just think I'll go, but probably less frequently.
Anything I didn't ask you that we wanted to bring to this conversation?
You know, I think there are all kinds of vocal disorders out there. This is one of them. Many of them are very rare. I've been in touch with the folks at the National Organization, and so I'll just plug their website, which is dysphonia.org. It's D-Y-S-P-H-O-N-I-A, dysphonia.org, and it's got information on spasmodic dysphonia, which is what I have, and a host of other vocal conditions. And the last thing I would say is this is not how I expected my career would end, but I feel very fortunate, A, that I've had so much fun doing what I've been doing for 35 plus years, and feel very fortunate. And the other thing is, this is not the end. You know, I don't have a serious health condition. This is not going to kill me. And so I'll go on to do what? I don't know, but it's a speed bump.
Yeah.
And I think anybody who's got a vocal condition, plenty of people speak for a living. If you're a lawyer or a teacher, you know, or a singer, clearly. I can't sing anymore. Never could.
But I was just going to say.
But I'm bumped.
I'm stubborn. I won't let you sing. No, I mean, you know, this is something that we've personally lived with ourselves, you know, for many years, and trying to support you here. And as someone who has lived through a number of chapters professionally in my life, I know that this is just the end of a chapter, and there are exciting chapters. I know people say that, but yeah. I actually do believe that for you, just given who you are and what you do and your talents and your credibility, your name, your reputation, the next chapter is pretty exciting as far as I'm concerned. So thank you.
And at the risk of bursting into tears, I mean, I can't thank you enough for all the support that you've given me in being in my corner, in guiding me, and trying to figure out a way that I can continue to do something that I love as much as I do. So thank you.
Wow. We're lifelong friends, my friend.
We are indeed.
We wish Peter all the best. As you may know, Peter Haskell and Tim Scheld are the executive producers of this podcast, 880 In Depth. If you know someone struggling with vocal issues, we invite you to share this story. You can find all of our 880 In Depth shows under the podcast tab at WCBS880.com, as well as on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Michael Wallace. Thank you for listening.
Baseball is in full swing. NBA playoffs are heating up, and your NFL team is gearing up for training camp. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.